Hello, it's Brody. I love bringing mummification to you each week, and if you'd like to support me to keep doing that, you can make a once-off donation through the Acast supporter feature. There's no regular subscription, and your donation will help pay our music license, buy audio gear, and put fuel in my car so I can keep interviewing the amazing women who share their stories with us. There's a link in the show description and episode show notes.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to Mummification. I'm your host, Brody Matner. This podcast is a space for women and parents to talk about how they're feeling. And sometimes they feel like swearing. So this episode may not be suitable for young ears. Before we start, I just want to say this interview was recorded over Zoom, so the audio is a little bit rough in places, but please bear with it because what these women have to say is really special and very enlightening. Shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. Warmed up.
Okay, great. Everyone's warmed up and ready to go. Megan and Philippa are mums to three kids, Cinema, 11, Busky, 4, no, Busky's 8, 8?
9. Yeah. We even had to think about that.
And Fabs is 4.
That's right.
Thank you for chatting with me.
Pleasure.
Now, we are all in Melbourne, about a suburb away from each other, a suburb and a very big river away from each other. But we're recording via Zoom because all five of you have recently had COVID and we thought that we all had COVID, but we don't. But how are you all feeling?
Yeah, we're getting better, much better, thank you. Yes.
How was it with five of you down?
Well, we all kind of were like a bit domino, like 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. 5. So it kind of just slowly got through all of us.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, and the kids were really quick and fast and it was over, so it was quite lucky.
Yeah, it hit me probably the worst, and it was like having a really bad case of tonsillitis mainly.
It's not pleasant. Yeah. Now, if you were stuck on a desert island, and you can answer this separately, if you were stuck on a desert island and you could take one meal, one drink, and one personal item, what would they be?
Okay, I'll go first. I've written these down. My meal would be sticky chicken. Right, with rice, and my drink would be mango char thyme with pearls and lychee. What is it? Lychee jelly.
This is very specific.
So that was very cream, actually. And a personal item. So, would the family be with me?
No.
If they weren't, oh no, really? Okay. Would be a photo of them.
Oh, that's nice. What if they were with you?
The paddle board.
mine's probably pretty basic. I would take a pizza, a bottle of Gigi Rosso, my favourite red wine, and probably a camera of some kind, a DSL Canon probably. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm not sure why.
To take photos of all of the island.
Exactly. Yeah. While you dehydrate.
Now, when you decided that you wanted to have kids, what was the original plan for who would carry the baby or babies, or did you know how many babies you wanted?
Yeah. Yeah, the plan was that we would have two each.
Okay.
That was like the ideal situation.
Yeah. So yeah. We always wanted 4 children, which was ambitious. We would both, have 2 biologically each.
Yeah.
And with 1 donor. That was our aim. Mm. At the time, I mean, things didn't work out exactly that way.
A for the same.
That's kind of, it was the initial plan.
And so that plan changed?
Yeah, well, I guess it changed after the birth of our first daughter, when our donor and very good friend decided that he didn't really want to have any more children at that after cinema at that point in his life. So that threw a bit of a spanner in the works.
And so did you then, how did you decide what to do next?
Well, I think after we got over the shock, we just put our heads together and said, okay, what are we going to do? Because we still, we wanted to have more children. And then we just thought about another really close friend of ours who said to us when he first met cinema that if we were ever stuck, he'd be here for us. And so we're like, both of us thought, oh, we should get in contact with him. And so we did that.
And was there a reason you chose to use friends over an anonymous donor?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, yes, I guess for us personally, we wanted to give our kids the opportunity to know their other half. And, a lot of same-sex parents choose the complete opposite to what we did. And we can understand why you would go down that path as well. Like, it makes things a lot simpler. It's more about you and your family. And, everyone has their reasons behind these things. But I guess for Phil and I, we felt like... I mean, I didn't grow up with my dad in my life, and I would have liked possibly the opportunity to have some kind of friendship with him, which I do have now as an adult. And Philippa grew up with her dad and had a really great relationship with him. So we kind of, came at it from 2 different perspectives and, wanted to give our kids that opportunity to be friends with their dads, I guess, whether they're donor dads or.
We like them to have the opportunity to, find out about, where they came from and their history. And we like the idea that our family would grow as well, not just us, but if the dads, the donors, wanted to be more involved in our family, they could be. But we also said from the get-go, if it isn't for you, as we go along, that's fine too. We will navigate that at the time. And, things change and you don't know how things are going to work out. And Meg and I have always tried to be as flexible as possible, with each other when obstacles come up. And the same goes for, raising the kids and same with, the kids' dads. So we're just kind of like, we want to fit them to be involved
and it worked out really well for us. Like even, having 2 donor dads and our friendship and relationship with them and the kids' relationship with them has just grown and, we love them even more. And, it kind of worked out with both of the guys. Like, we couldn't have better men in our lives.
Yeah.
It sounds really amazing and I'm really interested to know how it works. I suppose logistics is the wrong term, but obviously the kids live with you the whole time and you're their primary parents.
Yep.
Do they call their donor dads dads?
Cinema does call her dad, and they call Jules Papa Jules. So Jules and his wife Ella have actually gone on to have a baby themselves. So that's pretty special as well for the kids, so a brother from another mother. So they know him as dad but would refer to him, like call him Papa Jules, I guess, is their name for him.
Yeah.
And, yes, they call Ty Bar Ty, which is Vietnamese for dad Thai, I guess, is the translation.
And did you have, like you said, things can change along the way, especially if they're, you know, if you do this with friends.
Yeah.
Did you have any kind of legal documents written up or anything official put in place, or did you just go for it?
Well, we definitely discussed that in the beginning with Thai, and we decided against it. We thought, how do we know, like, how things are going to, you know, flow? We never had children before. There isn't, like, you know, a guidebook that we can refer to about what to do. So we just kind of based it on our friendship and hope for the best, really. And we also did watch a documentary. A lesbian couple having a baby with one of their friends, and they wrote up a contract and it was terrible.
Yeah.
And they wrote up something, you know, like the baby at 6 weeks would go to their friend's house and they'd start shared custody in that way. And we're like, oh, I don't know if that's possible. But if it is, you know, of course we would kind of do that thing. But I don't think it's a good idea to write these things down when potentially you're not ready. That.
Yeah, I think it just kind of, for us personally, it was pure trust, and just like even for the boys, I think to trust that we would do the right thing, and yeah, and for us to put trust into the fact that they would as well, and it wouldn't come down to money or custody or anything like that, which a lot of the times it does. I think a lot of the time it comes down to money, like a lot of people that would even, you know, talk to us about it or the boys about it would kind of go, what if you end up paying child support, which was never part of our agreement with the boys. Like we never wanted them to pay anything to raise the kids. In fact, we kind of felt like we should be paying them for
the opportunity
to let, you know, us be mums and do all of that stuff. So, yeah, a lot of time it comes down to money, I feel, with contracts and agreements like that, but
I'm going to ask you a really personal question.
Yeah, go for it.
And you absolutely don't have to answer it, of course. How did you get pregnant?
No, we didn't want to tell you.
No?
Yes, of course we would talk about that. No, we did at home insemination, a little bit
off, very John Waters
off the grid. We didn't go through IVF. I guess we just didn't want to do months and months of,
if we didn't have to, like, we were lucky enough we didn't have to do IVF.
Nice.
I guess
so. We did at home insemination, which I'm sure you're vaguely familiar with.
Yes.
So basically it involves a syringe, sperm, and then do you want me to
No, I can put the pieces together.
So, yeah, look, we were lucky enough to be able to do it ourselves.
But I think that's really nice. Like, it makes it really personal. And the whole thing for you guys has been really personal because it wasn't an anonymous donor, it was your friend. And and because of how you all interact as like an expanded family now.
Yeah.
Having that be how the kids were conceived.
Yeah.
I think that's really nice. Like it is, it's really personal.
Yeah, it was pretty personal, and lots of laughs, lots of cups of tea.
And also people, like, we did go to a fertility specialist with me, and they also said, you know, doing it home style, you're not going to be able to do it like the way we wanted to do it. Mm. We're like, we'll see about that.
We have three children.
But also that's not for everyone either. Like, it's the thought of, like, doing something like that for a lot of same-sex couples is repulsive for them as well. So for us, like, yeah, I mean, that was, yeah, financially also, you know, less of an impact. I mean, I guess we possibly would have looked at IVF if we completely couldn't do that ourselves. And eventually Phil did have some fertility issues and we weren't able to actually do it at home, and we kind of made the decision that paper, rock, scissors for who would have our last child.
I just handed the baton over.
Yeah, handing the baton. So, you know, I guess if that was the case when we were trying in the beginning with Philippa, we definitely probably would have looked at IVF.
Yeah, we're lucky.
Yeah, very lucky. Also, it puts a lot of, you know, dedication onto the boys in that area.
It's a lot of work. And commitment from them.
Yeah.
It's pretty huge.
What's the process for them if you go through IVF?
I guess it's just about delivering sperm in
coming
a cup.
Over. And I mean, with cinema, it was chaotic because my cycle wasn't regular and we were doing this crazy amount of maths to try and work out when was the best time to, you know, to try and conceive. But with Meg, she was a bit more, like, regular and you could actually rely on, like, she'd come up on the ovulation sticks and stuff like that. So it was more reliable and I guess Jules, he knew when to come over and it was a bit more regimented, but,
yeah,
poor Ty.
And also we didn't know what we were really doing in the beginning either.
No, the first time, yeah.
So it took a while to kind of figure out the maths of it all, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it's probably the same as anyone trying for a baby, but you have to actually kind of go, hey, I'm ovulating. Do you mind coming over tonight to
Well, that's when the logistics comes in because they might have a test match or they might have a dinner party or they have actually lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may not match up with your ovulating cycle and stuff like that. So, it's just kind of working all that out and being flexible for each other and, yeah, that kind of thing.
Do your kids know any other kids who have two mums or two dads and do they talk to you about that or do they have questions?
Yeah, our kids have grown up knowing exactly where they've come from, the biology behind it all, how they were made. All of that kind of stuff. I think initially we really wanted to be part of those rainbow family communities and we did try, but it got a bit tricky. And I guess now that they're at school, occasionally there might be someone there who has two mums.
Yeah.
It's probably not so much at our primary school, but some kids are transitioning and, you know, our kids are really quite politically correct, so they will kind of talk to us about that and say, oh, this is what's happening and correct each other when they use the wrong term for how they're classified. But we have a couple of friends here and there,
but not
as many as we really thought we would have.
And I think each child of ours have processed that differently or dealt with it differently. So that's been interesting to observe. Like the older two, I think like cinema wants to fit in a way a bit more, and although she's very like a social warrior and she'll stand up, you know, for queer matters and against bullies and all that kind of thing. But I think she did try to struggle a little bit with her identity coming from queer family and not having that many around. Fabrizi, on the other hand, she is shocked that anyone would think she'd have a dad. And so, yeah, I guess they just deal with it.
And they do go through moments where they question stuff and say things like, recently Busky said to me, oh, you know, I wish that my dad lived with us and stuff like that. And then I kind of said, yeah, but then it wouldn't be as much fun when you went over and visited Ella and Jules, would it? And he kind of thought about it for a second and goes, oh, no, actually, it wouldn't be as much fun. So... stuff like that happens and they come out kind of saying the word dad, like it's, and they come out wanting to, you know and question, it's all around them. Like, I still get asked if the kids can do Father's Day stuff and I always say, yes, they can, they know who their dads are. But that's a constant, you know, kind of thing because people get a bit confused about where they fit in and stuff. But the kids are very vocal about it, whereas, like, this is my dad, these are my mums. They're pretty adjusted, well-adjusted, I'd say. I hope.
Yeah, they're brought up in a system where it is very heteronormative and, even you know, we've got a lot of kids' books about same-sex families and all that kind of thing, but that doesn't, you know, like society is bent in that way. So, of course, they're going to, you know, question their family and their identity and, you know, why their dad doesn't live with them and all that kind of thing. And they, you know, yeah, it's interesting. We've all had different kind of questions about it.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And for you two, as mums, have you both heard of the term matrescence?
No.
So it's like adolescence, but for mums, basically. So when you become a mum, it's the idea that you go through a huge transition. You go through a hormonal, mental, physical transition. And then, you know, it's like when people say you don't just give birth to your baby, you give birth to yourself as a mother. And so did you I'm really interested to kind of hear from you guys what it was like for you becoming mums when you carried and birthed compared to when you didn't. But also it's tricky because, like I carried and birthed both our girls, but it was different for me both those times. So do you think you both experienced some kind of identity shift after you had cinema?
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know what? It is really, it's been really different with each pregnancy and birth, 100%. Do you mean like what I experienced while Philip was pregnant, like how it made me feel?
Well, so because Phil carried cinema first.
Yeah.
And then you carried Busky. So do you think that you experienced matrescence differently or again when you carried and
For sure. No,
compared
definitely.
To
I think also like God, it would have been so different if for example we decided, or you know, one of us didn't want to carry children. Like, oh my God, it would just be completely different.
It's so cool that you took it in turns.
I am really grateful. I don't know if this is answering your question, but, you know, when, you know, I had cinema, I gave birth first, and, you know, I was so grateful that I had, because I felt like I could, not to take away from other mums who haven't given birth or anything, but I just felt like I was able to help Meg through the birthing, the labour, a bit more and give her the strength that she possibly didn't realise she had that I knew she had because, you know, giving birth, you know, you go to a different part of your brain that you've never, ever used in your life, which is incredible. And then actually, you know, obviously when you have the baby, then there's those euphoric hormones again. But actually when in labor or having those contractions, you actually go somewhere where you've never been before. Mm. And having experienced that and then being at Meg's side, when she was giving birth to Busky, I just felt like, I was able to help in a way that, I potentially may not have been able to as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
And also I think what's weird, well, not weird, normal in our family anyway, was the fact that when, I birthed my first child, I already had a toddler.
Mm.
So, I didn't get that really cool maternity leave break of going and having lattes with this newborn in a pram. Like, we were doing toilet training, and you would know this very well, Brody, at the moment.
Yes.
You're probably just through that now, but it's tough. So you've got a newborn baby and a toddler, and it's like, whoa. So I kind of went from hero to zero really quickly, and then that was a bit of a shock.
Was it really full on for you experiencing those hormones for the first time, but as a second time mum?
I think so.
And then was it I imagine it was different again when you had Fabs?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. And also because the kids were a bit older then as well, and we had a newborn baby, so, it was a bit going back to baby world again with kids that were a bit older, which was beautiful and really lovely to see them bond with this baby.
Yeah.
It was completely different again. And then just going through, not working again and putting everything on pause for a while as well. We call it being in the driver's seat when you're giving birth and being in the passenger seat when you're the supporting partner. And I would say personally being in the passenger seat was a lot harder than being in the driver's seat, just for the fact of you don't really know what's going on, and it's all just so shocking. You panic to a degree, whereas when you're in the driver's seat, you have no choice but to panic and just do it anyway. But I found it more terrifying being in the passenger seat.
Was that the same for you, Phil?
You mean when
she liked being in the passenger seat?
Yeah, no, I said when I retire, I wouldn't mind being like a doula or a maternal health nurse or something. I was like, I really got a great adrenaline rush out of it.
Yeah, I don't think I was a very good birth partner at all.
No,
I was
quite
mortified by it all, just going, is that what is meant to be happening?
Yeah. It was fine. It was great. You got me those like nice warm packs to help me with my bits and pieces while I was on my little yoga ball.
Yeah.
Moaning, deep, guttural noises.
It's so full on.
It was beautiful.
I really loved giving birth, and I felt really lucky with my two births. But what I really loved was that when I was pregnant, I had someone say to me, it was Claire Bowditch, but I'll probably cut that bit out because I've asked her to come on the podcast.
Please don't.
She said to me, giving birth's amazing. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
And she was like the only person that said, and so it didn't stick in my head just because she was famous. It was like everyone else goes, oh, the birth. And
yeah.
I found it really empowering. I was like, I am fucking amazing. I pushed a baby out of me.
Yeah, I wish I was that person, but yeah, no, that was definitely not me. Maybe more you. Philippa was probably a bit more power woman like you, bro, but yeah.
I was pretty stoked that I had this incredibly healthy little baby.
Mm.
I mean, it didn't, birth was not, I loved being pregnant. I loved the contractions where I went in my head with them. And then just went a bit pear-shaped after that, which was a shame. But, cinema was fine, and that really helped me through the next 8 months.
Also, I had a C-section and then did a VBAC, just a bit of a shout-out to all the VBAC moms.
How was that?
Freaking incredible.
Really scary. And I would choose a C-section if I had the choice again.
But you've written up in history books. It's great. You can do it.
With no drugs.
Yeah, and she was booked in to be a C-section and she came by herself, like the 2 days before, I think.
Yeah, a few days before her C-section, yeah.
Did you think about doing an emergency C-section?
Well, they ask you, and at the time I was like, no, I've got this, because the midwives kept saying to me, you've got this, you can do it, and then the doctors kept saying, the baby's really big, you need to do a C-section. So it was really confusing, right?
It was really confusing.
Up until the very last minute. And then when I went into spontaneous labour, and I was already quite far along when I got to the hospital, and I thought, no, I can do this. This is not that bad. Anyway, she ended up being, so both of my babies were posterior. So it was extremely painful. And yeah, I mean, look, in retrospect, it was probably a good birth, I guess, but it felt very brutal at the time and quite intense. So, yeah, I did it. And I said that I wanted to do it. But in retrospect, sometimes I go, I don't know, that C-section was really fun. Like, I think I'm the only person in history that really loved my C-section, Brody. I loved the burden. I loved them holding the baby up. I loved the baby going away for a little bit and then being reunited with it. The whole process I found really quite lovely, but a lot of people are mortified by that. So
yeah, it was like Fabrizia, the birth where you had that panic attack.
Yeah, yeah, I did. I had to have a glass of lemonade.
After, you know, like the nurse reads all the risks that could happen.
Oh.
I was like, no, this is the wrong person to be reading.
Yeah, she read me.
I was like, oh, no. I can see Megan's the blood draining out of her face.
Oh, God. So, wait, while you were in labour, they read you a list.
Yeah. You can die, your baby can die, you both can die. And then, yeah.
There was a whole list of them. I was like, oh, Jesus. She walked out and then I had, like, full-blown panic attack, Megan on my hands. I was like, it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right.
But I got a lemonade and, yeah, I was back on track.
Oh.
Didn't really bode well for the beginning of that, though. I was like,
But apparently that's what they do. I mean, most people don't remember, but that's quite normal to get those rights.
Read your rights.
Yeah, you're just like, yeah, get on with it.
Yeah.
What else are we going to do now?
And so now that you know that you're not gonna have any more kids, are you done? Are we out?
Yeah. No, we're
we're done.
I guess we just want to put all our energy into our kids now. I mean, it would have been lovely to have had four, but we just feel extremely lucky to have what we've got.
Yeah.
And also we're too old.
Yeah, too
old. Yeah, and it's not hard, as you know, Brody, just putting your career on pause and, you know, trying to do the juggle of daycare and just, you know, it's hard.
How do you both feel about yourselves in terms of identity, like personal identity, now that you've become mums and you're finished the birthing period? How do you feel
about your own identity? Well, that's a good question. Do we have one? No, you know what? We have actually just recently started. We've been working on a photography project together that we've, you know, been meaning to do something for years now. So we're kind of getting into stuff like that again, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And also I think, you know, your identity is the kids for such a long time and still is. Like, you worry about, are they doing something? Are they doing enough?
I think also, you know, we wanted to because, yeah, like our time was very centred around the kids, and then our creative outlets were, you know, I do a lot of photography with the kids, Meg will do a lot of filming with the kids, and then we started doing, you know, each year for their birthdays we do a video, a day in the life of, you know, them, and that we give them a video every year, and that was their birthday present.
They're such beautiful videos.
Yeah, we just kind of do that kind of thing for a while because, you know, like we didn't have much spare time. So, well, we may as well do something that incorporates them because we're hanging out with them all the time and we, you know, we want them to be part of this creative process as well. So that, you know, that was good. But we, you know, did get to a point and where we're like, we really need to be doing something independent of that as well. But it's just kind of breaking that, I don't know, pattern or routine or trying to break something to create something new. It's a bit hard because we both work a lot. And then, you know, when we do have spare time, we want to be spending it with the kids and us together. So finding extra time or new habits just takes a little extra.
Yeah.
I think I was really lucky in the fact that I never felt like I lost my identity with the kids. Like, you know how some people really struggle with that and just go, oh, I don't, I just really, I really loved, you know, when they were babies and being with them, and I didn't feel like, I mean, sometimes it was extremely lonely and, you know, you feel like your friends don't want to hang out with you as much anymore. But I didn't feel like I completely lost myself in it, which was really lucky.
What are you both most proud of as mums?
Of them or just in things that they do?
However you like.
I'm most proud of the fact that we try to keep our communication open with them. I know something unfortunate happens, like, I don't know, like Busky accidentally spending hundreds of dollars on some kind of digital game, you know. So we see that as an opportunity to discuss, you know, I don't know, about, yeah, what do we discuss?
Gambling.
Or, you know, we bring up topics and, you know, why that isn't great and how, what can we learn from that, or, you know, like rather than just panicking and just shoving it to the side. It's the same with anything. Like the kids know about, you know, menstrual cycles. They always have. Like it isn't a shock. Busky knows all of it. He's so well-rounded about that sort of thing. And I'm kind of like really proud of that. We're always open to discuss everything, so things aren't as hard. Even when what did we watch recently as a family? We decided we watched the Squid Games, not with the 4-year-old, but with the other two, because we thought, you know what, they're going to be watching it without us, so we may as well watch it together. And yeah, you know, we hit their eyes if it was a bit too intense, but we were able to discuss things openly with them, and we just said, you know, the blood is just like strawberry jam.
Yeah.
And they'd just be like, whoa, there's a lot of strawberry jam. So I don't know. I'm kind of proud of that situation that we have, and we talk about stuff, and that was a big thing for me. I didn't want things – I just wanted them to come to us if they had issues or we felt able to speak with them about topics. I didn't want them – I didn't want too many secrets. I wanted them to know about sex and – why you hug people and why you don't hug people or that kind of thing.
And I think also you get proud of them when you hear, because at home, obviously, they're rat bags most of the time. And then, you know, when they go to school, you'll talk to their teachers. And at our school, all of the faculty know our kids and love them and talk so highly of them and how they're politically correct and funny and you know, good
very
people, kind, and I guess that makes you really proud, because that's when you go, wow, I'm actually doing an okay job here. Because you don't know. Half the time you go, am I? And, you know, we go full-blown soccer mum, yelling from the sidelines, basketball mums screaming where the kids are, can you please stop yelling? You know, stuff like that. You can't help, but it makes you proud when they kick a goal or, you know, learn a new skateboard trick or catch a ball. Yeah, they make us proud all the time. They're pretty cool people.
And so what's something empowering that you would say to other parents?
What's something empowering you would say to other parents?
I would say go outside. Get outside when it's hard, go outside.
Yeah.
When you're finding it hard or if the kids are finding it hard.
Go outside.
Change location. Go outside.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Just because that helps me.
So I guess mine would be enjoy when you're like the funniest person in the world because eventually they say stuff to you like, oh, my God, that is so cringe. Like in your
mine's a bit convoluted.
Uh-oh.
So I always kind of like, tangent. Yeah, it's a huge ramble, hope not. But, you know, when you first have a baby and they're constantly having these milestones and you always feel like you're at least 8 steps behind their, you know, mental growth spurts, I was just like, it was constant when there were newborns and babies and then toddlers, but it just doesn't stop. And, like, I think at one point, you know, remember someone saying to me, at 3 months, things just become easier. And I remember 3 months hit and I was like, this is fucking not getting easier. This is not easier. And then I realised this is just how it is. And once I chilled out about that, I was just like, oh, cool, okay. Well, it's just kind of like getting to know your child and that's just the journey of having children. Like, you don't come out knowing them. But, yeah, get out when it's too hot.
That's kind of the wrap, isn't it?
That's the wrap.
I was also going to say earlier, like, when you know when we were talking about like same-sex families and stuff, like it's so interesting because you become the brunt of so many jokes, as you can imagine, like to your face, behind your back, like and it's I was just going to say, like, you know, when we were talking about how to make the babies and stuff, just in general, say, like, you know, our journey as a same-sex family, you get very used to being the brunt of many jokes, whether they're to your face or behind your back. And, you know, it's kind of like that's just kind of what happens, especially earlier on. Like, it kind of gets easier. So I was just going to say to a lot of, you know, same-sex families out there that it does get easier and better as the kids start to go through school. Like, people are less interested in how you made the baby. You know, the school community gets better. Like, there's less dads staring at you for a really long time to the point where it's a bit awkward. You go, yes, I am a lesbian, sir. You know, there's
but that's so awful that that's been your experience.
Oh, yeah. It's 100% the experience. But it gets better, bro. And, you know, like, I guess it's a bit of a journey too that, you know, you get a bit tougher as well. But I think the school community just gets better with it.
Well, they get to know you and they're more distracted with their own crazy family life.
You get less questions of, so when they say mum, how do they know which one they're talking to?
Pretty basic.
But anyway, I just did want to add that because, you know, like we've talked about so many positive things and that it is tough, like especially mother's group and stuff. Like I joined Phil's, so I was like kind of that random dad that, you know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the random dad.
Yeah, you know that dad that turns up. You know how they always check boy babies, their testicles, because they go inside themselves?
Oh, I don't because I've only had girls, but okay.
So you know how they do the hip thing a lot more with the girls?
Yep.
For boys, they are always grabbing their testicles. And the maternal health nurse explained it to me, like, their testicles can go inside themselves. So this is one something to talk to Leith about tonight. And I was quite mortified going, what? What do you mean? They can go in to themselves. Anyway, so I was constantly
checking
always a little, not checking, but a little bit paranoid about that. So one time when I was changing Busky's nappy, he's probably been mortified at this. I thought his testicles were really small. And I was like, Philippa, his testicles have gone inside him. And I was really stressed out. And I looked on Google and I typed in testicles inside. And then I realized that, oh, he's just cold. And his testicles had shrunk.
We had no idea.
And I was like, oh, my, because they looked so different. Anyways, no, that's right. They look like walnuts.
Yeah.
So I typed in walnut-looking testicle. Anyway, I thought that was a really funny story to share with Phil's mother's group. So I was telling them about it. And then one of the mums turned around and said to me, well, I guess you haven't seen really any penises or balls, so you wouldn't really know what they were meant to look like. And I got so offended and pissed off at this point, and I was like, I've probably seen more penises than all of you women put together. And they all just stopped talking and stared at me, and I just went, oh, no.
That's hilarious.
And, yeah, it was at an Armadale's mother's group. They weren't impressed, and it was really embarrassing. So, yeah, you know, there's stuff like that that constantly happened where people just presume to know things as well, and you couldn't really talk openly about it. And, like, that was really tough because, yeah, you just feel so, like, yeah, out of it. And I guess that's probably when we should have been doing Rainbow Family stuff just to fit in a bit more.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that side of it was tough in the beginning, and just a lot of stupid questions, stupid comments, like especially going, like when you're pregnant and going through the hospital system. So I guess we didn't talk about any of that, and I felt like...
Can we touch on that? What it was like for you going through the hospital system as a lesbian couple?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't really... What else will we say about it? It was tricky. Like, you do get treated a bit...
I don't think you got treated very well.
Like, cinema's 10 now, and, like, things have really progressed. Like, they've got, as I said, kids transitioning at their school and stuff, and all of this, like... Some people are so much more politically on board, whereas everyone was a bit like, oh, to us in the beginning. And, you know, it was like a decade ago. It was really tough back then, and you were the brunt of a lot of shitty jokes and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to add that, or maybe that's a bit too negative, I don't know.
No, I think it's good to have in there because, you know, that's really different to my experience as a hetero couple. Like, I would have had no idea what that had been like for you.
Yeah. Mm. No, it was a bit shitty at times. Yeah. So I kind of feel like I'm better equipped to deal with stupid things like, so who's the mum and who's the dad? You know, stupid. But we just don't get stuff like that anymore. Like, occasionally you do have to go through, you know, the basics every time, but yeah, I think it's gotten easier.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so there's, you know, obvious homophobia, but also just, I think, not even intended sometimes, just being, you know,
Ignorant.
Yeah.
Thoughtless.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Can I ask, was my conception question?
No.
Ignorant
and
authentic.
No. Wait. Yeah. Go on.
Go.
No. I'm genuinely asking if that was, because I suppose when something is done differently to how you've done it, well, no, I won't put it in a third person. Because you guys conceived differently to how I conceived, I was curious about it.
Yeah.
But is me asking that? Offensive isn't the word well, is it offensive?
No, because I think the way that you wanted to know was about, you know, I guess like you've talked to other women on your podcast. Yes, I have been listening to your podcast about their IVF journeys and stuff like that. So I feel like that's the same.
Yeah, and I find that stuff interesting anyway.
Yeah, and you weren't doing it in a gross way or a derogative way. We weren't a joke, you know what I mean? It came from a... How did you make your babies? And I really love that. And we love talking about stuff like that.
Yeah.
No, and I really loved your answer because, like I said, it feels really in line with how you guys parent with your donor dads. Like, yeah, you've done it all together. Yeah. It's
yeah. No, yeah, you're exactly cool. Right. That's exactly yeah. how it is. I'm sorry if we rambled.
No, you guys were awesome. It was so good. Thank
really?
You. Yeah, oh, really? I loved it. Yeah, I was like glued to you. It was, yeah.
Oh, really? I thought yeah. I might have gone a bit off track. That's one question that you
we'll
asked.
We'll see how it is.
Thank you so much, Meg and Phil, for sharing your story with us. There are links in the show notes to the Rainbow Families website and the Rainbow Families section of the Raising Children website. Both these sites have heaps of information and resources for LGBTQI plus families, and I encourage all non-LGBTQI plus families to also have a read and educate yourselves. Mummification is produced and hosted by me, Brodie Matner. Our beautiful music is composed by Ben Talbot Dunn. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review and subscribe. You'll be notified when a new episode is released and it helps us reach new audiences, which in turn will hopefully help more women feel less alone. Thanks for listening.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.